Welcome to the Duluth Rundown interview section. We are just about to get going with our next interview, but first, a message from our sponsor, Austin Jaro Sports. Austin Jaro is where you want to go to get anything running related, from gear to shoes to food, and of course, great advice from all the people that work up there. So check out Austin Jaro at 1025 West Central Entrance here in Duluth, Minnesota. Thanks, Austin Jaro.
All right, and we are joined now in our interview portion of the podcast with Jacob Wortman. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us. I've wanted to have you on this podcast for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So, it's an honor and a privilege, like I said. Yes.
Yeah. No, it's going to be great. First of all, congratulations on the 100-mile win. That's not everybody can say they've got a 100-mile victory, you know, on one of the more difficult courses probably in the country.
So thank you.
That's a big thing. So yep. Congratulations on that.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it was an experience, and I'm still, actually the recovery's gone really well, but yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
How so?
It was honestly easier than I thought it would be. Okay, and that's not meant to dilute it at all, but I've never understood why people do hundreds. I'm a little older. I'm 39. This is my first 100. And I was always like, never going to do it. I'm never going to do 100. And I think it was actually David Roach who kind of inspired me. I've never been a real high mileage guy. So hundreds always used to be, you got to run 150 miles a week to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And I think the paradigm has really shifted to be much more focused on kind of speed, strength, mm-hmm. and then nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I was like, sure, I'll take a shot. And so I took a shot, and it really was. It was not as hard as I thought, and I had a blast. So, yeah.
Would you attribute that, I'll say, relative ease, that it was easier than you thought?
Yeah.
Would you attribute that to the fact of being 39 and being very experienced, or the training regimen was similar to what you're used to already?
So I think first it's I had a unbelievable crew. My crew killed it. Yeah. So
that's
helpful. All I had to do was get to mile 42.
Okay.
And Superior this year let Pacers join you at County Road 6. Mm-hmm. So I just needed to get there. Yeah. And I knew I would have Pacers to the end that would see me through. My crew, Eric Nordgren, my wife, Emily Wortman, and little Tyler Kay, they killed it. So Tyler's had the course record in the 50. So he kind of understands that course. Eric's done it, I think, 7 starts, 5 finishes, and then my wife just knows me. So, the three of them were just, they killed it, minimized the time I was in aid stations, and then just really carried me through and really helped me get through those, tough mental pieces. Yeah. So,
it should also be mentioned, I believe, that your wife is also an outstanding runner
in her own right.
So, that's very helpful as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I think, that was great. But no joke. I was a wreck the week before because I was so nervous because I didn't know what to expect, and I was kind of dealing with some lingering injuries, and you can fake that for a shorter race, but I figured I might just blow my hamstring out.
Sure.
So
I think that would catch up with you over the course of
103 miles. Yeah. So. I think that what made it easier, and again, not to dilute the technical nature of it, it felt easier than I was expecting, right? Yeah. It wasn't easy, but it wasn't as bad as I had built it up in my head.
Right.
And it was really, I think it really was just the nutrition and then kind of my strength coming into it, focusing on strength this year, because as a 39-year-old, I'm not maintaining that without dedicated strength training. Mm-hmm. So between those two things, it did make it easier.
And I bring up the experience thing too, because I was looking at the finishing results, and it's a bunch of old guys up there in the top 10. It was really cool to see. And I say old relative to what you would see on a 5K race when it's 22-year-olds and 25-year-olds. And this is all 35-year-olds. Right. Everybody's in the 30s pretty much, except for maybe one person who was 28.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's a patience right? Like yeah. I was probably sixth or seventh place for the most of the first half.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think a little bit of that was being maybe overly conservative, mm-hmm. but also just really having it be my first, wanting to finish and really trying to reduce and mitigate the potential of dropping out. So just going really smart, like they went out hot. I stayed with it. Mm-hmm. And then like, I literally stopped at the first aid station just to regroup, let people go, and then do my own race.
Nice.
So
cool.
That was new. I never understood, like, talking to Eric, it's like, hey, don't you guys run together? And he's like, not really. And I was like, what do you mean? You're with the same people for 100 miles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, no, I don't want to touch your pace because I don't want to do that. So that was interesting.
Yeah, because it takes, in a way, it sort of takes away that racing aspect, that mentality where you are with somebody and you're working together or kind of against them, but also together. And really in this case, you're solo.
Right.
Yeah.
Like racing the clock almost.
It was. Yeah. And that's why it was like such a mental game to get to 42. Cause then I knew I'd be with somebody and we can talk. Interesting. And, again, like I said, I think it was easy just because of how scared I was. Like, I couldn't get over the fact the week before, like, I just kept playing the fact that I would go through 26 miles and I would still have 77 left.
Right.
And like, there was something terrifying about that. Even if it was 74, it would be different. But the 77 number, just like, I couldn't get over that.
After the marathon?
Yeah, after the marathon, you still have 77 miles left. And it just came and went.
Right.
So.
Like at Silver Bay, you're not at the chair, like, oh, 77.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, how do you eat an elephant, right?
Yeah.
Like one bite at a time. And that's really how you got to approach these races. So, yeah.
So wait, you said, Jacob, you never, the 100 is just not for you. You had that in your mind.
Yep.
But like, when did the idea actually hatch to like get in 2025? Like when did you start putting the pieces together?
Like watching David Roach at Leadville last year, kind of listening to his podcast, listening to kind of how the paradigm has been flipped a little bit in terms of training, and then being like, oh, I can do that. And so, I put in January, like it was a marginal winter for skiing. So you're thinking, I don't really ski season, whatever. Let's focus on September. So put in there and, you know, I've done 8 50 milers. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, I should probably get one of those hundreds done and just say I've done it and quit.
But it was like notching the belt. Like that was kind of the idea.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So let's get it done and call it good.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious too, like more in the lead up to the race, you said strength was a big aspect.
Yep.
Can you talk more of that? Like what's the plan? How did that look throughout the year?
Yeah. So I think strength wise, it was like dedicated 2 or 3 days a week. So just doing that, doing more cycling. Like I love Zwift. Like huge proponent of Zwift, like super effective. I've got 2 kids, so it just makes it easy down in the basement on that. So kind of strength from both, like just dumbbells, specific strength, kind of upper body, focusing on that too. And then doing a lot of cycling and a lot of Zwift work. And then on top of that, layering in heat training too.
That's
another thing that I started to incorporate this year. I literally throw a Tyvek suit on and just go at it.
The bike?
Yeah. Yep.
Do you have one of those core internal body temperature
sensors? I did.
Those are nice.
I did. The problem was the functionality with my Coros watch was like I couldn't get it to sync. I did have it, but I am currently heat sensorless right now.
Yeah.
That sounds so painful.
That's definitely kind of a new aspect is heat training kind of protocol and utilizing that. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I did a couple runs with it where I put a down jacket on in June and go. But I found just the bike itself was just easier to do because like sometimes it's hard to keep yourself hot. Like I don't think people realize that.
It is.
Like you get some wind and it's like stop.
Yeah.
Like
so but indoors
you can control it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who aren't familiar with heat training, because I think it is kind of new, the goal when you have a hot race is to be prepared for heat by heat training, not necessarily trying to cool down during the race. that's not going to be as effective. You actually want to be adapted to the heat is the concept.
Well, and it also has, it's kind of poor man's altitude in terms of building your hemoglobin.
Yep.
So sometimes I wish I lived at 6,000 feet. So this is my way of trying to build that up.
Totally.
So.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. So you get into Superior, you're all eyes on September.
Yep.
I guess what was, did you have it in your mind? Like, I think I could do 20 hours or I'm going to go for the win, or was it just like notching the belt, get the finish?
No, it really, I think I was, you know, kind of jokingly cocky, like with the 20 hours or 28 hours, but like there, you know, that kind of was my goal was either 20 hours or just walk it in and finish. I think that kind of morphed the closer I got to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to do 28. That would be painful.
Yeah,
So I don't really think like there was a huge goal. Like I knew I was fit, but I was also very terrified.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
There was again, very conservative on that first half. Probably left a lot of time on the course because of that, which it's probably fine because the back half was great. But I think I learned. But going into it, there really wasn't a goal like of winning or doing any of that. I knew I could be competitive, and I was just trying to do my own thing.
And just for context, at the NMTC, at the first NMTC race, Jacob and I were talking about Superior, and Jacob said, "I'm either doing 20 or 28.
No in between."
Yeah. And then he said, "I'm doing," and he said, "Mike, you're doing 25 no matter what." I fell short of that. So you were right on 20.
It's not totally true. We were going to see whose training worked better, because I think you had more of the long stuff. And like, that's one thing that I didn't have a lot of, was like, my longest was definitely Voyager. But besides that, I probably went 3 hours a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So yep.
Forget that. I'm getting a heat suit.
Get a heat suit.
Yeah, your training clearly is the...
heat the suit, strength, and, nutrition. Like, you want to hear, like, the disgusting thing was I took in over 3.5 pounds of essentially sugar.
Yep.
I probably spent, you know, for that race, about $90 on nutrition. if I go back and tally it up, I was really excited for all the good food, because Rocksteady puts on great races.
Yeah.
Really excited for all the food. I didn't have any of it. The only thing I had was gels and scratch high carb drink mix.
Yeah.
And I never want to see that again.
Great.
So I think that is a I am blessed with a stomach that can take that. I think I averaged over 110 grams of carbs an hour.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Do you feel like that was the sweet spot, or if you would could go back and change things, would you do more or less? Or
so interesting. I noticed that my drinks were getting less or more and more dilute as I was going on. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, Emily's like, "That's because we were running out of scratch." So okay. So I think I could have done a bit more.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know how much that would have changed things.
You needed to spend about $120 on nutrition.
So as it turns out. So right now, yeah, I can afford my family. We can afford our mortgage. We can afford sports nutrition, or we can afford my kids' groceries. We can't afford all three at the same time. So
diluted is.
Yep. So,
how did you kind of nail down that 110? Like, how do you know? Because that was a part. Like for my race, I felt like a big, where I maybe left time on the course, is just getting that dialed in with the mix.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, how you,
So,
was that the goal? Like, I want to do 110 per hour.
Yeah. So I had like a, I spreadsheeted it out, had it, you know, pretty down to a science. I tried it at Voyager and I was able to do it for the most part at Voyager. There was kind of some, and that's really the purpose of Voyager, was just do like a race simulation and see how that all worked. And it worked pretty well up until, you know, three hours till the finish. And then it was just like, it's just too hot. Like nobody's taking in calories at this point, because it's 82 with a 90% humidity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just like, get to the end.
Brutal.
So I didn't do a ton of gut training. I know some people are big proponents of that, but it was more just like, I think I could do it just because of my experience with Voyager and having an iron gut. So
yeah,
so
go for it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And did you use bottles, pack?
Yeah. So both? I started with a vest because it was relatively cool. Yeah. So I started with a vest and then I just went to handhelds for probably mile 20 plus on because my crew was killing it. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
Yep.
So Voyager, was that part of the plan, you know, leading up to Superior?
There's just a lot of unfinished business with Voyager. I think I've been like second like 40 times in that race, and I just never seem to be able to figure it out. I always lose it in like the last 10 miles.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, I feel fit. Yeah. When I signed up, the weather didn't look as bad as it turned out. Like, right. It just me and Eric Norgren kept watching the weather, like texting each other, like, oh,
yeah,
oh, no. and then watching the air quality, like, it's like, yeah. Oh, so
yeah,
no, Voyager was just like, I think we were around that weekend. It's just such a chill race. It was like good race simulation, and It was a battle of attrition this year. I think three out of the top five guys dropped, and it was just like it was a tough day. It was the toughest day that I've run with Voyager because I honestly thought I was like, oh, I could break seven.
Yeah,
this year,
right? I felt confident, your fitness,
but like it was nope.
Which you've done in the past.
I have, yeah.
You
know,
so like you have the accolades to put a good race, yeah.
It was, and like people don't know this, is like I went backwards. So my one piece of advice is never go backwards during a race. Okay. So during Voyager, literally had my phone with me. This is how rough it was. Called my wife and I was like, I think I'm done. Can you meet me here? And then I was just going to run essentially to there and just
backwards on the
meet my family. Yeah. And so, I probably put 10 extra minutes on the course because I walked backwards and my 10-year-old son kind of looks at me and he's like, you're going to drop out, Dad? You're winning. That's kind of lame. And I was like, ooh.
Got a point.
And my wife was like, yeah, I mean, I'll go get the car, but you only have like 7 miles left. And
oh, man.
I was like, ooh.
7 miles.
They knew how to like just.
Stick the knife in, twist it.
It was tough. So I just was like, all right, fine. We'll just finish this. And came away with a W, which is great because I really don't want to do it again.
Whatever.
It's always the hottest weekend in Duluth, and like it's always tough. So,
do you feel like you took care of the unfinished business?
Like I took care of it. Nice. And I knew Ben was there, and like I was just waiting for him to catch me. And you know the course where you've got the aid station there at Jay Cook, and like you kind of are going back along the hardest trail on Earth. And sometimes you can hear the aid station erupting for people, and so like I heard them, and like in my mind it was like he's only like a minute back, and he's gonna catch me, and he didn't. But any further, and I think Ben would have caught me and beat me again.
Oh gosh!
Yep.
You have now had two kind of right off into the sunset moments with Voyager and Superior.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It is. Yeah.
But my question is, are you going to ride off into the, are you going to do them again?
No, I think I'm definitely going to try to do a more competitive 100. Not saying Superior wasn't competitive, but something that's just a little bit faster in terms of more runnable. Because looking at some of those other times, like Run Rabbit just happened, and looking at the course, looking at times there, and I get it, it's at elevation, but it's like, I don't know, I think you take me, you take John, who was second, and I think we could run a lot faster there just because of how technical Superior is, and so I would like to try my hand at one of those.
Yeah.
So show them what the Midwest is made of, for sure.
Yeah.
So
now that you have one under your belt.
Yeah, and I learned a lot. You know, I've heard some people are targeting Superior next year too. There may be maybe a fast race next year. So I may put in for the lottery.
Might have to defend the title.
Yeah, and try to see if we can get something. Like I love running in California, something out there.
Yeah,
so.
Cool. Nice.
I think what's really cool, Jacob, you are the fourth person to win Voyager and Superior in the same year.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's I think they said they work well. My only regret with Voyager was I kind of came out with a bit of an injury and I had to take 2 weeks of pretty minimal running, which probably wasn't optimal. But I also think people overthink like the need to get running volume in. So I was able to keep it through cycling, and I think I don't on it. It sure maybe that was the 14 minutes of going sub 20, but I don't really think so.
Wow. Well, big congratulations.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
Should we kind of get back to our normal, like, scheduled programming that we kind of went off track right off the gate?
No, that's okay. We certainly can. One thing I do want to ask, and this will kind of lead into going back in the beginning of your running days, is you are probably in town, I think you have the best range, the biggest range, especially now you've done 100 milers. Like, you run fast, rode 5Ks. How do you do that? Not everybody can do that. Chris Rubish is a guy who comes to mind who's had always had a great range of distances.
Ben Cogger.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But I look at it, and I don't mean to bash Scott Bailing. Awesome, rode 5K guy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really venture up much more than a half marathon, I believe.
Right.
You know, how do you have such a range?
Skiing.
Yeah.
Nordic skiing.
Yeah.
So I was just Dario Colonia. He's a multiple-time world champion, Swiss skier. He ran a 222 marathon at Valencia. Paul Goldberg just ran a 228, like 50K. Just these guys are big guys.
Yeah.
And Evan Ongara just ran a 31-minute 10K at 100 kilos, right? Like, and so I think kind of having that Nordic skiing background gives you kind of the cardiovascular system as well as those different fast and slow twitch muscles to go over that range. So I would say skiing, and I again, that's probably one of the things that helped me with Superior was that, because like honestly the climb up Moose Mountain like killed it. It wasn't the climb up, it was the down. I would say that, and also taking kind of like 4 months off a year of running and that's why I think at 39 I'm able to do it without getting injured.
Interesting.
I don't have the miles that others may have if you run throughout the year.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Of sense. And you're right, those Nordic guys, huge aerobic engines, but extremely powerful muscular wise too.
So that's the one. Now it's kind of like I feel fit. I'm trying to grab my fitness and do some maybe 5-10Ks this fall.
So it makes sense.
And you're I was going to say, you're not talking about taking 4 months off exercising. You're taking four months off running.
Correct.
Some still hard work.
Some may say harder. Depending on what the conditions are. So,
And then have you always been a Nordic skier?
Yeah, I would say I'm a better, if you look at my results, I've kind of had better results in Nordic skiing. So I've done the Berkey. This will be my 19th year this year. So I think my kind of like top athletic accomplishment was finishing 26 there 3 years ago. One behind Adam Swank, of course. He finished 25th as a 45, 46 year old. So I've always Nordic skied. That's what I did in high school. I didn't start running until I was a junior and actually ran in college just because there was a really good group of guys. But skiing has always kind of been my first love.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in the cities. So I grew up at Richfield, but essentially just a block from Minneapolis.
Okay, so Richfield High School?
Richfield High School, yep.
Okay,
so
nice.
Go Spartans.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
And what got you into running in the first part? How did running start?
Yeah, I wasn't a good runner in high school. There was just a good group of guys, right? Like, I skied, and then my junior year, I was like, I should change shape, and I'll run. And we had our own like little locker room with N64, like NFL Blitz, and so like it was a social thing.
Were a lot of the same people in skiing and running.
But not entirely. Like it's for the most part very similar people, but there's a little difference. And like the cross country guys were just good, and I think it's just a really good social team. You know, everybody's likes to focus on school too, right? So like I think it's really healthy, and that's something that I and trying to inspire my kids to do too.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So did you do track and cross?
No,
just cross?
I've never done track.
Yeah.
Yep. So she played tennis in the spring. Oh, like I grew up playing tennis. Wasn't Edina, not Wyzetta, not Hopkins. Like I would just play with my dad. And that's something that I was actually, I did that through high school.
So, okay.
Yeah.
And did you keep running into college or how did your running career kind of progress?
I was a fabulously mediocre D3 runner. Yeah. So, I was never real good. Ran in the MIAC. I think my best finish was like 40th. John, who was second at Superior, actually ran at St. Mary's because I knew he looked familiar and I looked him up and was like, oh yeah.
He was a
much better runner. Had a blast. Really good friends, develop friendships because of it, and just super super mediocre.
Yeah.
So.
And skiing in college was still kind of your main athletic.
I'd say yeah. Actually, I coached when I was in college. I coached my high school team in college. Mm-hmm. So it's junior and senior. I was coaching the Richfield Nordic team, which was again great. I'd say I'd still focused more on skiing, but really, really loved running. I think that's one of the reasons that I've never burned out on it was because I was never, I was never world class.
Yeah, sure.
So I've always just been kind of okay. So
do you think that's like a pressure thing? Like if you were like at a top level?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's easier to burn out.
Okay.
So, yep.
And, go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, so it sounds to me like kind of your high school, college, you kept saying like mediocre.
Yeah.
This or that.
Yeah.
You strike me as someone who has a big competitive fire. Would you agree with that?
Balanced with having fun, I think.
Okay.
So I wouldn't disagree. And when I like mediocre, like, I'm talking relatively, right? Like
relative
to like D3 competition, I'd probably beat most non-runners, and I want to make sure like that's clear.
Yes.
But I think I enjoy pushing myself. Mm-hmm. So it's not even an external motivation as much as it is internal.
Right.
Huh. So
right.
It's can I be better than I was yesterday?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was getting at too with regards to that fire. Because I think regardless of how fast an individual is, and I almost sometimes hate the terms fast and slow because it's relative.
Yeah.
But having that internal fire, you know, we talk about with our kids, do you have that dog in you?
Yeah.
That phrase that gets used.
Yeah.
And no matter who you are, you can have that dog in you.
Yeah.
It sounds like something you have.
Yeah. And I think, and that again, I have the utmost respect for people that ran Superior in 38 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Honestly, I had it way easier than they did.
Right.
And man, that's where it goes back to like, it's just this, being able to push yourself and be better than who you were yesterday. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. There's a famous story with Greta Weitz, who is a world record holder in the marathon. And I think she won like 5 straight New York City marathons. And one year she ran it with Fred Lebo, who was the founder, but he had cancer, but he wanted to run it. He had never ran it. So she ran side by side with him for this marathon. She said it was the hardest one that she ever did.
Yeah.
Having run like, 2:27 or whatever she ran back in those days. And now she's running like 4:45 or whatever they ran.
Yeah.
And she said that was much harder.
Yeah. Oh, and I think there's a little bit of that too, as you start to age, is just like, you may not be able to be better than who you were yesterday,
but
are you still pushing yourself? And there's more than just the physical too.
Correct.
So.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Where did you go to college then?
So I went to McAllister College, down in St. Paul. So went there, again, ran there 2004, 2008. So.
And then what brought you to Duluth?
So I came up here for grad school. Mm. So grad school, and I kind of chose Duluth specifically because I knew the outdoor opportunities and was like able to kind of like make it fit and make it work. And, found a program up here, great professor, great funding opportunities, and was able to, I had a blast as a grad student.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
I loved it. So, I recommend grad school to everybody if you can make it work. So,
so after you know, collegiate running, what kind of happened to your running career from from there?
Yeah, so like the great part about Duluth is like we have a fantastic running culture. Like when I came up here, I think I'd been here for 2 days, and then old Tyler K, Tyler Kjorstad, like was like, hey, I'd skied against Tyler some in college. He's like, oh, they got these races, right? So I think like the second or third day I was here, I got introduced to NMTC races over in Superior.
Third day.
Yeah, third day, and literally had to then go pick Emily, then my girlfriend, now my wife of, you know, 12 years. I had to go pick her up from the airport because she was getting back from somewhere. So like I fit it in and I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what like did it for me, and just been involved with NMTC stuff since then, and doing those different races, being in the trail scene. Not, I don't consider myself a trail runner. Like I'm a runner.
Yeah.
I run, right? Like I road, trail, whatever. Like it's, I love them both. Yeah, since then just kind of just doing different things. I mean, most of my racing is around here.
Right.
And kind of exposing myself to those different opportunities. So
nice.
You got to do something in Duluth, right? Like that's the thing is like, it's great, but the weather can, you know?
Yeah.
So. I also know too, you had spent some time in Oklahoma City.
We did.
When was that?
Yeah.
When did you come back? Kind of.
Yeah. So I'm a geologist. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the first thing every geologist does is go work for an oil company. So
that makes sense.
After my master's, that's where I went down, worked in energy for, I'm going to say 2 years. That's not quite true, but it was 2 summers. And so that counts as 2 years if you're in 2 Oklahoma summers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
just could not adjust to like the temperature, the weather. And then also like I challenge anybody to go look, but there's not a lot of public land in Oklahoma. And that was kind of weird coming big from a ranches. Place with, state parks, national forest, all of that, that we have up here. Yeah. That was actually probably the hardest part.
Oh yeah.
It was just like, there wasn't trails. There wasn't these things to do unless you had, you know, a really rich buddy with 4,000 acre ranch. So, the heat and those were the two things that opportunity came up here and I was like, let's head back.
Interesting.
So you've done, just like Tony alluded to, you've done a lot of different races, Jacob, from, you know, shorter road races. I mean, you've put up some impressive marathon, road marathon times, 50s, now 100.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you go about like planning like a season or just deciding which race to do over the years?
That's a good question. I wish there was like a better. So the Berkey's every year.
Yeah.
So there we go. So the Berkey's every year, and that's always like the A race.
You're right.
Regardless of what kind of running stuff is going on. In terms of like, you know, I've also been a dad now for 10 years. So those first 5 years is kind of just a wash in terms of like, you just fit in what you can. Right. The hardest race I ever did was I did Grandma's 2 months after my youngest was born. Mm. No, a month after my youngest was born.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I ran like I get 250 something. And like, I had to like take my shoes off during, it was just, it was awful. So really the first 5 years of kids was just fit in whatever.
You're
just,
right.
Just get it done. Since then it has been kind of like I'll try to pick a key race to focus on.
Yeah.
And then from that, you know, structure my training, but a lot of it is just like I like to be active because it's just a great stress reliever and keeps me fit. So again, it all comes back to if it's not fun, I'm not doing it.
Right.
I made $0 from my wins this year, and like my 10-year-old son was apt to point that out. So like, you know, if I'm not having fun, I'm not doing it.
In fact, it cost you $100 in food.
If you do the math, it costs a lot more than that. So I was like, and this is why, like, I think gravel racing, mountain biking, all that's super cool, but like, running is getting expensive enough. And
with the carbon plate shoes they got, you know,
I love my shoes. I love carbon plated shoes. They're amazing. They've actually made running more fun, yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's funny. Do you have a favorite, especially, I mean, I assume your favorite race would be Berkey. I mean, that's just a raw assumption, but.
It depends on the year. The Berkey itself is actually like you want to get your cortisol up. Like go to the elite wave start. Actually, I've heard wave one is even worse. But like, man, it is. You're going and your heart rate is like 190. Like you just like spiked because poles are flying everywhere. So like, I love after the Berkey, but the Berkey itself can be such a stressful situation that the race itself is sometimes like, ooh.
Yeah, you're right.
Favorite. I think it depends on the year. Like,
yeah.
I like them all and I hate them all. Yeah. So like, there's definitely your highs and your lows.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
For the Berkey, do you typically skate it?
Yeah. So it's always skated it except for 1 year on Classic. Then I'll never make that mistake again.
Okay. Why was it not so enjoyable?
It's a lot of double poling, a lot of upper body. It's a pretty tough course. The skate too, it's just faster, more fluid. I feel like the course is better designed for skate. Mm. So that's what I stick to.
All right.
Yep.
All right. I asked because I probably have a Classic Berkey in my future here. I need to be prepared.
It's fun. And now that they've got like an almost separate trail for, you know, the majority of it,
yeah.
I think that's made it a lot more attractive. But nice. Then once you kind of merge up with the skaters, I've heard it can get a little dicey too. Okay. So,
all right.
What is it about skiing that you're drawn to?
I don't know. So it's such a, like, it's a, skiing is, it's a hard, it's a thankless sport, right? Like you look at the last two winters too,
mm-hmm.
and like I literally did 1,000 laps at Spirit over the last two winters.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like.
No other option, right? I mean,
no other option.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about skiing. You could probably ask any skier and they'd probably have a similar like, yeah, like it's amazing. Like when it's good, it's great.
You're right.
But like you only get 2 weeks of the year sometimes. So
to have that great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, once everything clicks, like just how fluid it is and like how fast it's, you can't replace it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Where did you ski in the cities when you were in high school?
I would say Highland is kind of my like home. And like now I go back to the cities and I'm like so jealous of the infrastructure that they've built up around skiing. Mm-hmm. So like I almost like Duluth, don't get me wrong. Duluth is great. So don't come at me. But like I would say the cities is actually a better ski town now because of that infrastructure they have.
Yeah. So, I've heard similar things from some of the ski people that maybe we're a little behind now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the Theo, all of that. Like when I was there, it was kind of Elm Creek was it. Mm-hmm. But now you've got, you know, six different world-class options. Nice. So
that's cool.
That's good. I mean, it's just the number of people in the metro. I mean,
for sure. Yeah, it's hard for us to compete with a place that's 30 times bigger.
Yeah. So. What about in Duluth? Where are your favorite spots to run around town?
Oh, again, I don't have a favorite. I really like out at Spirit, kind of the SHT out there, like. That's probably my favorite, I would say. A little bit more of a commitment coming from the east side, particularly with the never-ending construction. MnDOT, throwing that one at you. where it's, you know, but in the past, that's kind of just 15 minutes door to trail. And usually I don't drive a lot to run or exercise. I find that cheating. So, but when I do, that's my favorite place. Mm-hmm. So.
You kind of have to drive to ski, though, right? I mean, like...
Kind of have to drive to ski.
Yeah.
You do, yep. Yeah. So that's the hard part. I know some people that have biked to ski and, like, fashion that up, but, you got to bike to ski.
The question is it a short drive or a long drive,
exactly.
too?
Exactly.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah. So...
Long drive to Theo.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's, like and thankfully, like, Lester's... I'm not too far from Lester, which that's my favorite place to ski.
Okay.
Even though it's just they do a great job maintaining Leicester. It's always usually the best, first, and usually the last place you can in this outside of Spirit.
Right, but. Yeah.
I know you touched on this a little, Jacob, but I'd be curious to kind of circle back to your training this year. Like, what was the plan? Did you even have a plan going to Superior, and how was your execution of the plan, I guess?
Yeah, I had a rough plan. I started following kind of a plan. I think I did a good job focusing on strength, also speed. So doing a lot of like strides and kind of getting that built up. I raced Park Point. Like, so I had some like goal things, and it was ultimately like to build up to a certain volume level. And like, I think 70 miles a week was kind of what I peaked at running, but then supplementing it with biking and then sprinkling in the heat suit stuff. I wouldn't say like I had a firm like week by week plan, but it was more fluid to adapt to dad responsibilities, work responsibilities, and kind of make. I've just found that I don't have the patience, time to have like a dedicated schedule that I need to adhere to.
Right.
So, a more fluid than that. And at the end, it's like, okay, do we get that long run in, or do we do this? It's where does it fit in the week?
Yeah. So, yeah. And like, so you're averaging, you know, what, like 11, 12 minute pace, like for Superior.
Yeah.
But like, your long run, like what did your long runs look like?
Sure. I did like a 28 mile run on pavement to just like, what can I do? And like, I was really focused on heart rate stuff too. What can I do at like 140 heart rate? Cause that's kind of like, I would say middle of my zone too. And that's what like my heart rate for Superior was 137.
Okay.
Yeah.
Heart rate for Voyager was 158 for 7.5 hours. So like that just goes to like the air, the heat, everything.
Yeah.
So I would say I did a couple long efforts like that where I just tried to go by heart rate and try to maintain that while also kind of keeping it faster.
Right.
I don't see a lot of benefit in really long, slow distance given the amount of time that I have to train. So it's more like just focus zone two, trying to get like high end of zone two for, 3 hours.
Right.
So
interesting. It's just like in my mind, it's hard to imagine how like strides would translate to that 100 mile success, but then
efficiency.
Yeah. Yep. And, I mean, my training is out the window now.
Yeah. Kind
of comparing what you and me were doing.
So efficiency, like I was running the flats the entire time. It was honestly what killed me, and I didn't practice enough of technical downhill running.
Yeah.
And that's like the place that I put a lot of time on, or lost a lot of time, particularly at the end, because my quads, hamstrings were just shot. Mm-hmm. So
how much time did you spend walking/power hiking up hills, would you say? Did you run?
I tried to be real smart about hills. So that's one of the reasons that like the pack they dropped me right away was because I was trying to keep it steady on the uphills and power hike those.
Yeah.
So
not necessarily surge up a hill, but just be steady and
controlled. And it, coming back from kind of the ski background, right? Mm-hmm. Like do a ton of like hill bounding, other things like that. So that's that's sometimes how I always do hills.
I always feel like skiers as a whole make for really good trail runners because of the bounding aspect, because you're used to kind of heart rate going up and then coming back down a little bit more, that fluctuation where running, you tend to maintain a heart rate.
Yep.
Yeah. You guys have adapted to that kind of a thing better.
David Norris, shout out to, I mean, he won the Berkey 2 years ago. He was like second last year, and now he's, you know, killing it at UTMB. I think he was top 10 even, and he won the mountain running championships. So like, there's a lot of that, I would say.
You touched a little bit on like battling injuries and stuff like through your career in athletics, Jacob. I'm curious, what have you done to minimize that? What's your, I guess, stance on injury prevention in general?
Yeah, I guess For me, I've been pretty blessed with not being injured except when it's like self-inflicted because I'm doing something stupid. So I think the only reason that I got injured after Voyager was because I came back too soon and tried to push it. And that was dumb. In terms of injury prevention, like this isn't good medical advice, but like I don't stretch and I just kind of let my kind of muscles just, again, not a doctor, callus themselves over. So I have the flexibility of a 25-year-old rubber band.
Right.
So I don't really know why I've been so lucky. I think, again, a lot of it comes back to taking kind of 4 months off and just focusing on something totally different. And then just kind of just like in 2020, the last 2 years, like I didn't run a ton. Like I biked a ton in 24 and then 23. I was looking back at my training before Superior 50. Like I didn't run a ton that year.
Yeah.
So just kind of cycling the sports that I'm focusing on has helped, I think, stay relatively injury free.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I've never been like a 100-mile a week guy. Like 50 to 60 is kind of, that's enough.
Right.
At the high end, right?
You're
like people
right,
always
right.
say like their mileage and they always like choose the highest they did in the last 2 years. And that's what they do every week. But so like, I'd say usually between 40 and 70, like I think that's the sweet spot and trying to vary that during the year.
So. Okay. And I think there's something to be said for like not doing anything stupid, you know, like
not doing anything stupid. Yeah.
Right. Or just like listening to your body is maybe a different way to put it.
Yeah. Just not doing anything stupid. And that's like whenever I've gotten injured, it's always like, I was stupid. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
There's never, that wasn't very, like, where did that come from? There's always like, that's what caused
it. I'm going to sign up for this race, like 2 days prior to the race or something. Yeah.
I feel like when people are injured, like there is something you can kind of look back to.
Like
that was the stupid thing.
Definitely.
Were you, are you a good athlete in other, you mentioned tennis, baseball, basketball, that kind of thing?
No.
No?
No, okay. I quit baseball and like and my dad can listen to this, but like my dad let me quit baseball. I believe it was like a 9-year-old, which I was good at to go play soccer, and I was probably the worst soccer player in Richfield.
Okay,
so
no way.
I was so bad.
How can you be bad at soccer?
It's a good. Well, I was.
Okay,
so I was.
You like just missed the ball completely?
I was not good at soccer. That was going to be the sport I was. I don't know what it was, but like I loved soccer, but I was just terrible at it.
Yeah,
and like in retrospect, I can look back and be like, it was just such a dumb decision. Why? Like I was good at baseball as a 9-year-old. Dad, why'd you let me do that? And so outside of that, basketball, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Like if you're picking a team, pick me last.
Okay.
Football, I'm not a big guy. I played hockey, but my body was not never going to be a competitive hockey player given my frame. Love hockey, but definitely so I was good at tennis, but again, tennis is one of those I enjoy it. I still like watching it. I don't play it as much just because I live in Duluth and this is not a good place to play tennis.
Nice.
So it's unfortunately, like with my kids, it was very much like, okay, what's going to be their sport?
Yeah.
And I think their sports are going to be very similar to me and Emily's sports.
Endurance stuff as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just from the gene standpoint.
They're actually really good climbers. So they're really small and like they can, they do vertical endeavors and like that's really cool because I got no idea what climbing is about. But
how about rowing? Have you ever done anything like that?
No.
Yeah.
Never done rowing.
I'm always curious though.
No.
It's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, what's next for you after this just amazing season running on the trails?
Yeah.
Any bucket list races?
So, I have a 5K PR of 16:00.
Okay.
Ran that at Brian Kraft pre-Super Shoes, so take 40 seconds off of it. so, I think I'd like to just get under there, and the years are kind of against me, yeah, I think. Yeah. So, like, I think turkey trot, just trying to just hammer the turkey trot this year.
Okay.
That might be my focus. Nice. And then take that into the winter. So
if you can just suck in behind someone that's competitive enough
just,
race.
And just get the right shoes. Like, yeah, those Pumas. Like, I was talking to John Curley, and I was like, oh, you got those new Pumas, huh? Let me borrow those. So, I think that's it. And just kind of having fun this fall.
Yeah.
I was talking to Tyler and thinking like, hey, maybe we should do a FKT on the DT. And then we're both like, that'd be a pretty bad decision. So just having fun. Nice.
That's a stout FKT right now.
Now with the DTs changed so much that, yeah. And running, not biking.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
no way. Yeah. There's some other segments across Duluth that like I got my eyes on. So
yeah,
like I try to get all as many of the uphill segments as possible. So yeah. I'm looking at you, Pam Key Larson, with your Leicester River climb. I got to get that one. So,
I think the Duluth Traverse fastest known time is held by the other male who's done the Voyager Superior back to back. Jake Heggie.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Which it's extremely fast.
It like is. Yeah.
9 minute pace or.
Yeah, I think we were thinking like you could. It's super runnable though. Yeah.
Right.
Super runnable.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll see.
It's not like the 100 you just did.
No, we're not doing it this year, though.
Yeah. What else you got, Tony?
That might be about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jacob, you have anything
no.
else to talk about?
No, I had a blast. You know, it's been a fun year, and it's just trying to keep things fun. I don't think running hundreds is for everybody, but I'm also like really, it's amazing like how young people are coming to it more and more.
Yeah.
But I have no regrets waiting until I was 30. I do not think I would have fun doing it as a 20 something.
Yeah.
Like there's something that you just kind of, you build up like the ability to handle pain like that. Like I feel like just having kids like prepared me well for just kind of this like constant, not super painful, but always like kind of mildly painful.
Yeah.
Not saying my kids are painful, but it's just like, you know, I think that's prepared my head.
I'm awake at 2 a.m. but I'm not changing diapers right now.
Exactly. Yep. So yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, congrats again.
Yeah,
it's amazing season with the back-to-back win and yeah,
super cool. Yeah, so. Turkey trot.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Cool.
And that wraps up episode number 86 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Thank you all for listening to us. Thanks to our guest, Mr. Jacob Wortman. It was really great to talk to him. He had some cool stories to share and some cool insight.
Yeah.
Happy to get him on the podcast. So.
Yeah. And send us an email, people. We're always looking for ideas, races coming up. If you have a shout-out, we would love to do that on the podcast. It's theduluthrundown@gmail.com.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.